In only 2 days, you can move your career further, faster with a Harvard DCE Professional and Executive Development Program. Advance your leadership skills, craft smarter business strategies, build your network, and move your career in the right direction. You'll earn a certificate of completion, add Harvard to your CV, and become the leader you want to be. Our intensive programs are designed to fit into your busy schedule. Attend online or on the Harvard campus. Search Harvard Professional and Executive Development to learn more.
Was a bug, little bug, hardly there.
You're listening to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, episode 115, A Bug's Life. Oh, Morgan, where art thou?
Without any evidence,
his paws were ready.
He was full of confidence.
Some people haven't any.
Didn't have much common sense.
It's highly overrated.
He just knew.
Howdy, howdy, animation fans, and welcome to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, Disney, DreamWorks, Pixar, Don Bluth, and everything in between. I'm your host, Mason, and I am actually the master and supreme leader of the podcast tonight. And my two loyal subjects are Chelsea Robson and for the first time on beautiful Technicolor, Pablo, our resident Pixar wonder kid, is here with us.
Hi, how are you?
Isn't he beautiful, folks?
Aw, Pablo!
Such a beautiful creature.
Pablo's great.
I hope we all sound good. We are trying a few different things with the broadcast, and hopefully the sound quality is up to y'all's expectations. And we also want to excuse Morgan. She could not make it to this stream. So we should name this episode, Oh Morgan, Where Art Thou?
Oh Morgan, Where Art Thou?
And that'll give Chelsea an excuse to miss out on the next one. And then everyone will be missing. Everything is fair. Guys, this is episode 115. And if this is your first time listening or watching us, this is the Animation Addicts Podcast. We are good friends who sit down and we talk about our love for animation. So we'll typically review one film or talk to one, you know, person like we did in the interview last week. And we try to go over everything we can about how much we love or don't love, but mostly how much we love the art of animation, like the art form that it is. And so if this is your first time, welcome. And if you're a returning patron or a returning listener, then welcome back. And we are super glad to have y'all. So we've got chat on both YouTube and on rotoscopers.com/live. And so very thankful to have you all here. And we are actually reviewing A Bug's Life today. This was a patron choice, wasn't it, Chels?
It was. Yes.
Good choice.
We love our patrons.
We really do. If you're unfamiliar with the whole patron's choice concept, if you are a Patreon subscriber for the Rotoscopers, then you get the choice of choosing which film we get to review on the show. So the power is yours, to quote Captain Planet. our patrons are always very, very good at choosing the coolest animated films for us to review. And we've not only done films, but we've done a mini series for television. We did Over the Garden Wall several episodes back. And so super excited. And that is a great way to participate in the podcast, is becoming a Patreon subscriber. And then you have, you know, that power to choose what we review. So think about it.
Hello. From the creators of Toy Story
to infinity.
Hey!
Comes an all-new motion picture event. Walt Disney Pictures presents a Pixar Animation Studios film.
No! Hurry, no! Don't look at the light!
I can't help it. It's so beautiful.
Out here in the field, I fight for my meal. I get my
Let me tell you how things are supposed to work. The ants pick the food. The grasshoppers eat the food. It's a bug-eat-bug world out there. Someone could get hurt.
He's quite the motivational speaker, isn't he?
Let's ride!
It's the same year after year. They come, they eat, they leave. That's our lot in life. It's not a lot, but it's our life.
I've got an idea. We can find bigger bugs to come here and fight.
Now, why didn't I think of that? Oh, because it's suicide.
What they needed was some help.
You're perfect!
What they got...
Popcorn! Snail popcorn!
...was a bunch of clowns.
We're losing the audience! Get up there now!
They'll only laugh at me.
That's because you're a clown!
You parasite.
Circus bugs! Hey. I thought you were warriors.
Hey, cutie! Want a holiday with a real bug? Yeah.
So, being a ladybug automatically makes me a girl.
Christ! She's a guy!
Come on, Francis. You're making the maggots cry.
Walt Disney Pictures presents...
Desperate!
I couldn't tell!
A Pixar Animation Studios film.
This was not supposed to happen.
Squish him.
Ah! Run for your life!
An epic.
I think I'm going to bat myself.
Okay.
Of miniature proportion.
We don't serve grasshoppers. For the colony and for oppressed bugs everywhere.
Hello there, girly bug.
Shoo fly, don't bother me.
A Bug's Life. Coming to theaters this Thanksgiving.
Hey, turn your butt off.
All right, so A Bug's Life. Super happy, again, to have Pablo. I saw this film when it was in theaters, and I absolutely loved it. I think I watched it like 5 times in theaters and probably 30 times on VHS. VHS. And,
I pulled out my good old VHS this time. Good old reliable VHS.
Ours is at my mom's house. Beware, because I am notoriously good at quoting this film. It's like one of my favorite Pixar films to quote. I don't know why. Probably because I just saw it so many times, and I actually have entire sequences memorized, so I can just go on and on and on with quotes. So stop me. There should be a signal. Or something, like if I'm just going on and on, I'd be like, Mason, shut up.
Anyway. I can make Dory speak whale to make you stop.
Oh, there you go.
The thing about this, though, watching it. What was that?
That was Dory speaking whale.
Nice. So the thing about that, as I was watching this movie, I was like, you know what? Okay, let's go into it. My original thoughts going into this time, after not having seen it for so, so long, it was like, it's probably one of the lesser Pixar films, you know, it's one of those lower ones. And then after I watched it again, I was like, no, it's not. This was great. just like Mason said, like there's so many parts that I could too. I could quote so many parts just on and on and on. So that was a fun thing getting back into it.
Yeah, it's weird because I hadn't watched it in such a long time. And the same thing happens to me every time I'm planning to see the Pixar movies. I'm like, oh, I have to see the Bug's Life. And every time I love it, but I also forget it really quickly. I don't know why. I was reading about it yesterday and I saw like a concept art picture of the bird and I was like, oh right, they make a bird, like that's half the movie, and I did not remember that.
Yeah, would you say this is one of the more underrated Pixar films?
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
I would say so. It's that movie that I got into, and when I watched it and I realized I could watch this over and over again. It's got great replay value, but at the same time, it is kind of, I, for whatever reason, just like Pablo said, it kind of doesn't stick as well. And I don't know what that is.
I honestly don't know either. I've thought about it a lot. I've wanted to write about it, but I just can't figure it out. It's very strange. because it's really good, but it's just not very memorable. Like, I know most Pixar films by heart, and this one I didn't remember like half of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty interesting. I don't know. I wonder if it was because people were still kind of like simmering off of the like the success of Toy Story, and then Toy Story 2 was coming right after, or was in production, you know, during the production of Bug's Life, and so maybe because it was so long ago, but it wasn't Toy Story, maybe it's underrated and people seem to maybe forget about it. I have a couple of family members who would never forget Bug's Life. And it's one of our family's like more cherished Pixar films that we always seemed to watch.
That's good, because I was telling my sister how I didn't remember half the film, and she was just so sad. She was like, oh, poor movie. Like, it happens to her too, so it's just very strange. So I'm happy someone appreciates it more than we do.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I appreciate it after I've watched it, but like I said, it had to be,
yeah.
I have to watch it again to really get into it. Well, all that being said, let's actually get into the main discussion about this. So okay. some general information about it was, it is a Pixar movie. So Pixar Animation Studios. It was directed by John Lasseter, and he added on Mr. Andrew Stanton. If you've heard those names ever, I don't know, maybe. And what's cool about that is, you know, after John had been the only director on Toy Story, and he felt like, I need to bring somebody else on to make this one less headache for me, not headache, but just less on my shoulders, and also to kind of help some of the other people come on up. And Andrew Stanton was the one that he chose. And obviously you look at, you know, Andrew today, and he's one of cinema's top producers, top directors. So obviously a good choice in that. Also, one of my greatest little tidbits of information is both John Lasseter and Andrew Stanton voiced Bug Zapper Bug numbers 1 and 2, respectively. Mm-hmm. Highlights of the film. And I'm not being sarcastic. That is one of those quotes that I always quote. Don't go to the light. I can't help it. It's so beautiful.
I love it. This film really is morbid. There's like a cockroach who got his wings pulled off by a kid or something.
Oh, that was so sad.
It really was, but it's also so true. But it's like Pixar has this like penchant for making a commentary on man's influence on the environment and on nature without directly showing man. It's like, like the city is pretty much man-made because it's all made of like little tiny boxes and stuff like that, and you can see the evidence of man all around. You know, what if this was like, for all we know, this is set in some like, you know, 200 years from now, and most of mankind has been wiped out and only the bugs are left, you know? What do we know? Then it'd be like the movie 9. Oh, we got to review that one. Hey, patrons. Anyway. So this one was pretty, pretty successful. I mean, I felt like a lot of people went to see it and everybody loved it. Like, you can always judge how successful you think one of these films are because with the McDonald's toys.
Yep. I had those.
Well, it was released on November 25th, 1998. What a great year in animation. The budget was $120 million. And it ended up, you know, worldwide getting $363 million, and 44.8% of that was domestic. So,
yeah.
That was ended up being like a measly $162 million, you know. But yeah, so it was definitely, looking at all of the animated films of that year, it was the biggest success for animation.
Yeah.
You know, other
even more successful than The Parent Trap. It's not really animated, but
yeah,
they use CG.
But that was 1998, though. Yes.
Hey, The Parent Trap was also huge in our household. Yes, on a given day, on any summer, there was one summer when it came out on video, where we watched the parent, or I was forced to watch the Parent Trap every single day of the summer. Speaking of movies, I can quote. You know, for a while, I was asking people like, "Hey, whatever happened to Lindsay Lohan's twins? Like, she looked exactly like her, but she never got back into acting. So, kind of weird."
Awesome.
Anyway, they fooled me. Fooled me once. Shame on. I don't know how that goes, but anyway.
Well, it was a year of some big heavy hitters. It was nominated for an Oscar, along with some of the big hitters, was Mulan and Prince of Egypt. And so those were some of the biggest ones. Can't forget the Rugrats movie. I mean,
hello. I got some opinions on that one. My gosh.
I thought it was very interesting that it was nominated for Best Original Comedy or Musical Score, which I didn't know existed until I researched this movie. And it actually, that category only existed from 1995 to 1998. Uh-huh. Allegedly, they created it because Disney was dominating the Best Original Score category. Like they were winning every year with The Little Mermaid and Lion King, so they separated drama and comedy, and it only lasted for 3 years.
It was like two categories in one. It was original comedy with a musical score.
I think it was best original comedy or musical score and best drama score, but lasted like 3 years.
That's so funny.
Well, as we've seen, the Academy is always changing.
Yep.
But yeah, very cool. The Prince of Egypt and Mulan and A Bug's Life.
That's great.
My gosh, I love freaking Prince of Egypt. I love Mulan. I love A Bug's Life. Never seen Patch Adams. Never seen Shakespeare in Love. I'm not really interested in that. But anyway. Back to this film.
Shakespeare in Love. The reason why he's bringing those up is those were the other contenders for the Oscar that year, and Shakespeare in Love ended up winning. Wah, wah.
I don't get that. Like, anyway. Who cares if Shakespeare falls in love? Anyway, this film is beautiful. It's gorgeous. Yeah. Like, all sorts of, like, brilliant visual effects that they pulled off, and it was only 1998. Like, computer technology was growing rapidly, but it was nowhere near like the Hyperion engine, you know, with Big Hero 6. You know, but you got one thing I always noted, and I noticed this time again, was the translucent leaves. We're just now getting to where we can plausibly render translucent skin in humans. So, like, you know how your ear glows when the light hits it a certain way? They found out a way how to render that in real time with very little actual computational time. And so we've come so far, and yet it seems like Pixar was pulling off some amazing technical achievements this early in the game. Yeah. Gorgeous lighting. I love how the lighting changes in the colony. It has this kind of bluish greenish glow.
Oh yeah.
And then Gypsy, her wings were amazing in this film. And everybody's got this very, very kind of colorful kind of way to them. And go ahead.
I love that they're also like showing off. The very first shot in the movie is like the sun and a bird flies by, and then it turns out it's a reflection on water, and the water ripples, and it's like they're just showing off, but it's great.
Ladies and gentlemen,
what are you doing?
What do you mean?
I'm making just keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros, two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude, stop with the voice. Keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
Yeah, totally. I remember I read a little bit in, let's see, let me see if I can pull it up. Oh, did I lose it? Dang it. Where's that freaking book? Oh, there we go. In Infinity and Beyond, the story of Pixar Animation Studios, I read up on the section on A Bug's Life. And I think reading it, I think coming out of Toy Story, I think they thought that, well, they started by kind of not tailoring I think they thought it may have been pretty easy to render out a bunch of hard, shiny bugs with the kind of computational power that they had. And they're right, because like on your 3D packages like Maya, it's pretty easy to do like a hard surface with a shiny kind of carapace or whatever. It's pretty easy to pull off that kind of plasticky look. But the film obviously is so much more than that. And John Lasseter had a big part, or like a big role, in pushing the technical directors for the film to achieve some really incredible effects. And I'll talk about that in a little bit. But I think we need to drag out point out the ant in the room. And yeah, that was another 1998 film by the name of Ants. I don't think it's a big deal. Ants did come out before Bug's Life, right?
A month before.
On the surface, it looks like Bug's Life is actually copying Ants, but that's none of my business.
Yeah, I was reading about it. Originally, Ants was coming out in like spring of 99, but Jeffrey Katzenberg like offered huge financial bonus to the artist if they managed to get it out before A Bug's Life.
Dude, so it was just... I have absolutely no problem with that. I love Pixar, but I also love DreamWorks. And if you look at Katzenberg's perspective, like coming out of Disney and starting a new company and wanting to prove something, to like prove their worth to the world, like it's actually a pretty cool feat that they pulled off. But unfortunately, everyone will always compare Ants to Bug's Life and not the other way around. And I don't know. Maybe it's fair. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's totally irrelevant, but that's just the way it is.
I think it's because Ants is just darker.
It was.
DreamWorks went for the PG rating of a show, and then, you know, Pixar definitely went for the G rating. And so it's kind of fits with the medium at the time. And so it was a lot more palatable, I guess you could say, for those audiences.
Yeah.
But it was like, there's just a lot of similarities. I mean, a common worker ant.
Was it really that similar though? Okay, tell me why you think it's similar.
Well, okay, so it's a common, think about it. It's a common worker ant with a reputation of thinking too much, just embarks on a journey that affects his entire colony and begins a romance with the princess.
Okay.
So, and then you go in a lot, like there's just so many things, like I saw this video on YouTube that, I mean, can I just say I love YouTube videos, random people just putting these things together. It's like, thank you, man, for putting that together. There are just so many times when it's kind of the exact same story, except slightly different. There's just, it's the life of a bug.
A bug's life.
It's a bug's life. I don't know. If you really kind of boil it down, I guess there's some similar elements. Of course, like you're part of a colony, an ant colony. Of course, you know, there's going to be the conflict of like, can the individual make a difference in such a conformist society? But they really push that kind of conformity in Ants. Mm-hmm. Whereas Flick's conflict in A Bug's Life is a little more complex than that, because in a way he did need to think of the colony before himself, but because like
I don't think he was really thinking about himself though. I mean,
there's a point when
just can't turn it off.
There's a point. Well, yeah, there's that too. I mean, there's obviously multiple conflicts. Like Flick is a klutz who makes a huge mistake, and he goes through great lengths to prove himself and to fix his mistake, but he finds out that it was all not true. And instead of telling everyone that he made another mistake, he ups the ante, kind of like Aladdin. He goes deeper and deeper down the rabbit hole. And then there's that iconic, like, you lied to me moment, you know, and there really wasn't that in Ants. It was more like one individual. It was like the everyman's struggle against powerful aristocratic forces that are trying to destroy a civilization from within, or control one from within, rather than an external threat like the grasshoppers. So I don't know. Maybe I'm waxing too philosophical, but I see some similarities, but I really think they're total. I really think in the end, they're different films.
They are different films for sure.
And Ants is very dark. It definitely goes into that. It's got a real Julius Caesar vibe, you know, with the whole, like, the colony operates very much like the old Roman Republic. And there is a very, like, you know, there is your Julius Caesar and your barbarians and your, who's the guy? There's the Brutus and Mark Antony and stuff like that. Like, it's all in there. And then, but I do personally find A Bug's Life more interesting as a story. It's more fun. It's more upbeat. Mm-hmm. Ants is also worth a watch.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask, because I haven't actually watched Ants, so I was going to ask you if you make it sound really interesting. So
it's also interesting because, like bugs, like, kill each other mercilessly. Like, there's this great battle scene with the termites. Why they're at war with the termites, I don't know. They just are. And there's some really morbid kind of death kind of imagery there.
Yeah, there's a lot of death. Lots of death.
But Ants also has the antagonist that turns good in the end, which I love. I love that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I just don't understand why, like, Katzenberg knew Disney was making A Bug's Life, and I don't understand the choice to make a direct competition.
Ah, man.
Good question.
And they do it again with Nemo and Shark Tale. Like, they're not similar movies, but they're like ocean movies.
But do they? I mean, besides the fact that it's underwater, it's like completely different.
Yeah, but I don't know. I remember people saying, like, another animated ocean movie. Like, people don't know if it's DreamWorks or Pixar. Like, at least not back then. And they were like, another one?
It was definitely in vogue, and there were a lot of direct-to-video, low-budget films that were definitely meant to bank off of that.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as Shark Tale, I don't know. I kind of didn't like Shark Tale, but I kind of did. I thought it was kind of funny. It's just by that time, DreamWorks established its own, like, way of doing things, its own style, and I don't think that they really broke from it until Rise of the Guardians and How to Train Your Dragon. And for a while, it was that kind of stuff, like very pop culture heavy, big stars, you know, that didn't necessarily contribute to the film as a whole. But but anyway,
yeah.
Drama, drama, drama. If I were to get up on a soapbox, I would say try not to compare Ants too much to A Bug's Life, although it is curious how it seems like Ants was produced to compete directly with Pixar. I think it's gutsy, and it didn't turn out a horrible film, but it's still kind of one of those whoa.
Yeah, it's strange. As I was reading, like, researching for this podcast, I noticed that everyone involved in the movie just said that the success of Toy Story put so much pressure in them, because, like, if their second movie was bad, they would be like, a Toy Story was just a one-off and Pixar won't ever be great again. So they were very nervous. I think they delivered with A Bug's Life, but apparently they suffered a lot.
They suffered.
Well, suffered. There's a big reason for that. Going to Infinity and Beyond, the story of Pixar Animation Studios, page 130, if you want to read along with me at home. what they actually did was Pixar split its resources in two, and they stopped doing commercial work in 1996. So one part was doing A Bug's Life. Another part was working on a direct-to-video sequel called Toy Story 2. I guess when it first started out, they thought it would go directly to video.
Yeah.
So glad it didn't. And this is from Bill Reeves. He was one of the supervising technical directors, the job that I aspire to as a grad student. On A Bug's Life, he says he remembers it vividly. Technically speaking, Toy Story wasn't necessarily a huge leap over some of the short films. It was just a lot longer. But A Bug's Life was a huge leap over Toy Story, both in terms of richness of set, lighting, and effects. And the ambitions were just huge. And, oh, by the way, we're taking a third of your team away to go do Toy Story 2. He's like, okay, let's light up the recruiting engine again and find some more people. And he says those were really trying times, just trying to figure out how we were going to repeat the success of Toy Story and grow at the same time. So they were working with I guess, less people than were working on Toy Story, I think it's safe to say.
Wow.
And so a lot of stress. I think elsewhere in the book they said – somebody said that Bug's Life was like a nightmare to work on. But, you know, Pixar, it's always going further and further with technology. It's always developing more tool sets and more, you know, more things. And if you will pardon me, kind of a technical lecture here, but there was complications, you know, due to multiple plot projects and basically splitting it up. One of the big things that I love about this film is the crowd simulation. Like, in some parts, there are, according to the book, there were 700 distinct crowd characters at one time in the frame.
Wow.
That's really impressive, but do you know how much Ants had in its crowds?
A lot more.
80,000.
Wow. That's insane.
Yeah. I don't know how they did it. You know, obviously, maybe, here's a kind of a tip, like, every animation studio does shortcuts. They find the quickest, most efficient way to achieve a desired effect. And so I got to hand it to Ants. Like, this is what I found out online, 80,000 characters in one crowd. I kept going over. I was like, am I reading this right? Really, 80,000? But that's what it says.
That's crazy because in Infinity and Beyond, I read that the Pixar team said that they could only do 50, and then John Lasseter pushed them to get like to 700. 80,000. Right.
That's another testament to how much of a cheerleader or a motivator John Lasseter is. But I hope I'm reading that wrong, because that's just amazing. And yeah. Of course, you know, for any of you who are lovers of animation but don't understand much technical stuff, it's complete madness to try to animate every single one of those characters. So what they did, they had about 430 shots with crowds, and they, you know, after some pushing from Lasseter, the TDs or technical directors, they created the software that basically took a given extra, you know, one of those ants in the back of the crowd or in the crowd, and they were pre-programmed to have a certain personality, like shy, funny, or aggressive. And so they had built-in animations. So they would assign their personality, and every personality had built-in animations that adhered to that personality. So, like, how they blinked, how they looked around, how they, like, shuffled their feet, and how they shifted their weight, and probably stuff like how they ran or walked or laughed and stuff like that.
Wow.
And so any given one of those ants, they had little no two were alike. So they had built into that software, you could change the eye color, the height, probably the build, something like that. And so it was all personalized, but it's kind of a macro way of developing these giant crowds. And crowd sim is still a huge deal today. You know, of course, one of the biggest leaps forward was in Lord of the Rings with a program called Massive that was able to generate these huge armies of orcs and men and mer. And but this was a huge deal because, again, this was back in 1998, and it was only, you know, 20 years after computers read data through tape with holes punched in it.
Yeah, that's really impressive and smart, like the personality thing.
Oh yeah, that way. Once you pre-program it, I'm assuming they had the little algorithms to tweak it to where it's a little different. But I think it's safe to say that no animator had to touch any of those ants, and they could focus on the hero characters, which is a technical term for the ones that are the main characters, the ones that will be in front of camera with the most detail. And
the ones you're supposed to care about.
The ones you're supposed to care about. Although I cared about the ant colony. I love when they do the big cartwheel. The giant cartwheel of ants. It's so random. And then they go and join the circus. Good for them.
Yep.
So the computing power to render Bug's Life, so that is to draw out every frame after the computer calculates all the scene data, it was 10 times that which was required for Toy Story. But the average frame only took 3 hours to render. Like, that sounds like a long time, but that's nothing compared to, like, some VFX shots in films today. Maybe it took 3 hours to render on the entire render farm. That means you take, you know, several computers with processing and you combine their processing power. So I don't know if it would have taken 3 hours on one machine to render one frame. That doesn't sound right. So maybe it is pretty impressive that it, their whole render farm only took 3 hours, but it's just nothing compared to some VFX shots in films today. Return of the King set the record time for longest time it took to render one frame, and then that was shattered by Transformers Dark of the Moon, which took like 120 hours to render a single frame. You know, judging by the sheer work that the processors took. But fun fact also, most of the Ant extras actually got deleted due to file corruption and such.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510, is he declaring an emergency? There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Oh my.
Sorry to leave you in suspense.
You just like...
This happened...
killed half of our colony.
I know for a fact this had definitely happened by the time they went back to some of the older films to re-render them in 3D, like Finding Nemo. Finding Nemo had the same thing happen. And they actually had to go back to backup tapes. I was reading this, and I'm like, it just boggles my mind how data used to be stored on tapes. That just simply confounds me.
Mm-hmm. And I think the same thing happened with Toy Story 2, but like the film started to get deleted. And
yeah,
luckily,
I read an article on that where it actually got deleted, and then like it almost got deleted again, and they had to keep going to backups. Like, that's scary stuff, man.
Yeah, like some lady had backups on her home because she was sick or something, and that
saved
the movie.
She was on maternity leave, and so because of that, they authorized her and like only her to have a backup of it at her house. Oh, and so luckily. It was like, oh my gosh, wow. Well, you know, something that I really appreciated about this was their detail to characters. And like one of the characters, whether it was just like the animation style or even just the fleshing out of those characters that, you know, you're supposed to care about. They did such a good job with them. And especially you kind of didn't care about like all of the circus bugs I cared about. I wanted them to succeed in whatever they were doing. They were so endearing.
Just when they introduced them, like the audience is behaving, they're just not good audience. So you feel for the circus bugs. Like you immediately, you're like, oh, this poor bugs just want to like entertain people and they can't.
It's like they're not meant to do that. They're like, you find out by the end of the movie that they're heroes, and I guess the film kind of sets up, you know, maybe they're meant for something more, but it's not like they're like Hiccup where they're like, I want to be something more than a Viking dad, you know, but there's never a point where they're like, I want to be more than a circus bug. No, they just want to be circus bugs and they're not even good at that. I only got 24 hours to live and I ain't going to waste it here.
Oh my gosh. So great. Yeah. Here's a question for you. When the VHS came out, they actually had 5 different covers.
Oh, yeah.
So they had Hopper, Flick, Dot, Francis, and Heimlich.
Oh, Heimlich.
Now, I had the Flick version.
I had Dot.
You did have Dot?
Yeah.
I had Flick,
Really? Yeah. I think they made more of Flick, honestly. But I feel like... I really want to meet somebody who at that time, in that time period, like when it first came out, that bought all of the VHSs. Like, I'm sure there was somebody that was like, no, this is going to be big. I need to have all 5 VHSs. And I just think that'd be really funny.
Hey, we were in the 90s, and 90s were all about collecting, you know, Beanie Babies, yeah, Furbies, got to catch them all, you know, all that stuff. Except who would buy five copies of the same VHS tape?
That's what... exactly.
I have a question, though.
Like, come on.
If you were buying those today, which one would you choose?
I would get Hopper. Hopper's awesome.
I would get Heimlich.
Oh, Heimlich.
Heimlich? Oh.
He's just so funny.
I am a cute little bumblebee. I love that part where he's like, ooh, candy corn. Did it help you to finish it?
In the Pixar website, there's like behind the scenes stuff. Mm-hmm. And you can actually see the pitch meeting where Joe Ramft pitched that very scene. It's awesome.
Oh, really?
Well, Joe Ramft is actually the voice of it. And they said that after a while, they were like, yeah, that's probably one of the most endearing parts of this scratch tape is Joe Ramft's version of Heimlich. And so they just kept it. I was like, good choice. I liked that.
Very good choice.
So when you're starting out and watching this movie, the thing that pops out most to me is definitely the music. That was the thing that, like, you started out and you're like, wow, I am in A Bug's Life right now. I went and saw Pixar in concert, which if you ever have the opportunity to see, oh my goodness, definitely go see it. The first half of the concert is definitely more engaging because you're just like, oh my gosh, all of these Randy Newman songs are amazing.
Back when Randy Newman, it seemed like Randy Newman was like the go-to guy for.
He did most of their first ones, but he was, oh my gosh, so iconic. Every little part of this, when it started out and they're like going into this Bug City, you're like, oh my gosh, I'm in the Bug City right now. That is amazing.
Yeah, I barely remember the movie, but I remember the music perfectly. Like, it's just so good.
Mm-hmm. So two thumbs way, way up for him. Yeah, and, you know, I'm really glad that the music ended up so well. Yay.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, I do love it. It's very, like, adventurous and upbeat, you know? Mm-hmm. It is very happy. And one thing I remember is that I seem to remember very well is the castle intro that's now fully 3D. And stuff, and it does that kind of Pixar fanfare. And then I remember at the very end goes, and it does like this kind of cool, like, snare drum, you know, high percussion. And it's like, whoa, yeah, this is going to be great, you know. And that's so nostalgic for me, like, hearing that thing over and over. And
I did not remember that. And when I put it in today, I was like, oh my god, I forgot about this music and this Disney intro.
Mason, you said that you were all into the quotes. What was your favorite quote of this? I mean, what is the quote that you on almost a weekly basis could quote?
Can you give me 5 minutes?
The entire, like, 5 minutes.
Yeah, it's like one of those circle of life kind of things. The sun grows the food, the ants pick the food, the grasshoppers eat the food, and the birds eat the grasshoppers. Ooh, like this one time with that bird. Oh, Hopper was so scared. I wasn't scared. I was a million miles away. Oh, ow, 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 ow. And he goes, bam. I swear, if I didn't promise Mother on her deathbed that I wouldn't kill you, my gosh, I would kill you. And he's like, and believe me, nobody appreciates that better more than me. Shut up. I don't want you to say another word while we're on this island. Do you understand me? I said, do you understand me? Like, well, how can I answer you? You still told me not to say another word. Remember, Mom. And he, like, just cold clocks this freaking grasshopper. Still not done. He's angry.
Go for it.
He's
keep going.
I love how Hopper, he kind of clicks into poses. Like, he's very rigid. And he goes, hey, I'm a compassionate insect. There's still a couple of more weeks until the rain, so a few weeks of summer left, so you can all just try again. But Hopper, with all that we've lost, we don't even have food for ourselves. Look, if you can't hold up your end of the bargain, then I can't promise you protection, and there are insects out there who will take advantage of you. Someone could get hurt. And he does that. And then freaking Thumper comes out. It was like the scariest freaking thing.
Yes.
Ants is like Thumper for an hour and a half.
I don't want to watch it now.
It is.
Anyway, that's, I hope y'all enjoyed crazy. my little monologue there.
I did. I loved that.
I enjoyed it too.
Made the podcast right now. See, okay, going back to Thumper, I liked at the very end when they bring out the outtakes and you have Thumper and he's like, how did that go? I mean, really, I don't feel like I was really into the character. Maybe I should try again. Like one of those super.
Oh, he's like, I'm sorry. I just don't think I'm coming across. I know. I'll lather up a bunch of spit. Ooh, that's good. Okay. One more take.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, are you saying I'm stupid? Yes. Oh, I love Julie Louis-Dreyfus.
Yes, she's great in this.
I really don't think there was a voice actor who was out of place in this film. They just worked because the dialogue was so natural.
Kevin Spacey especially, like, I loved his Hopper. He's just so scary.
He's great as Hopper, horrible as Lex Luthor. I'm sorry.
Well, but Hopper, he's great. I'll stick with his good points.
Yep.
Also, I noticed that
all of them, though, emoted really well. Like, all of them felt like they were actually the actual, like, character. Oh, and did you realize Hayden Panettiere as Dot? What?
Yeah, I was like, what?
She was so little.
And she's adorable in it. Like, Dot is so, so sweet.
Yeah, Hayden Panettiere, she always does a really great job at whatever she's, everything I saw her in as a kid was really great. And then even now she does a really great job, but it's just like, I never would have put those two together.
Yeah, me neither.
Then going back, it's like, oh, okay, that's cool.
And I noticed a lot of the cast returned to future Pixar movies. For example, Richard Kindle, who voices Bing Bong, was in this movie too.
Mm-hmm. Ah, Bing Bong. I love Bing Bong.
Yes, who doesn't?
That's cool. I don't know who Hayden Panettiere is. Sorry, guys. I don't watch Heroes.
Oh, okay. Well,
what was she in?
She was also in, she's been in a lot of stuff, but one of the other ones that you might remember her from was Remember the Titans. She was the little
Scream
girl.
Scream 4. I remember that one. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Just kidding.
She's also on the hit TV show Nashville.
Oh, Nashville. Is that really what Nashville's like?
No, but it's, you know, I mean, it depends on the circles that you run in, I'm sure, but it wasn't like that for me.
One of my favorite quotes in the film is, can I remind you of Flick's Tunnel Within the Tunnel project? Took him 4 weeks to get them out or something like that.
That was really funny because it was actually quoting, not so much quoting, but kind of like a joke made in reference to Steve Jobs when he did his store within a store approach for the Apple store. So for his hand gestures, going back to what you were saying about his hands and everything, to how Steve Jobs would talk. And so
he's
a great motivational speaker, isn't he?
He's quite the motivational speaker.
We are
the real Brady Bros.
Brady Brothers from the TV show Brady Bunch. I'm Barry Williams.
And I'm Christopher Knight.
I played Greg. And who are you again?
I played Peter.
We've decided that we're going to do a podcast around episodes of the Brady Bunch. We're going to use it as a prism to look back to our experience doing the show and why the Brady Bunch is still popular.
Have a sunshine day.
We are the real Brady Bros.
Oh, I wonder if I can do that one. Maybe later. Anyway, that is a great speech though. And that's such a funny part of the film where they're all in this like sombrero that's filled with water and like all the grasshoppers are like drunk and stuff and singing and carrying on. He's like, we might as well be sucking. Hey, Hopper, you got a minute? Go away. Fine. I won't tell you about my idea. Good. Okay. I'll tell you anyway.
Oh, so good.
And, I was, you know,
Axel and Loco, they sweet talked me into it. I got confused.
I like how, I mean, I've looked at villains a lot lately and kind of how they do I believe them? Do I know why they're doing what they're doing? And you look at Hopper and he really is just, I mean, in essence, he's a jerk. Like, that's just who he is.
I would say he's a jerk, yes.
On top of that, like, his main reasons, how they go about sharing, like, no, we have to go back. We have to do this because this is our way of life. If we don't, then we'll actually have to work for a living. I mean, that's motivation.
Yep.
I mean, totally. Okay, and correct me if I'm wrong, or let me know what you think about this, but I actually think he has a lot in common with Lotso, Huggins Bear. Spoiler alert for those of you who haven't seen Toy Story 3. But, he intimidates others. He turns out to be the bad guy, of course, but you learn that he intimidates others and he controls them using fear.
That's the power of fear.
Because he's afraid himself of, like, losing his place in the pecking order. And so when Hopper says it's not about food, it's about keeping those ants in line, that's why we're going back. I think that's his, like, dual motivation. Obviously, he wants the food so that he wants them to stay in line so that he can have the food, and then everything just remains the same. It's basically this mafia protection racket very advanced.
It's very interesting because they are very similar, but Hopper is, like, really scary physically, whereas Lotso is just adorable. So I think if I had to choose, I would choose Lotso simply because of that contrast.
Yeah.
Like, everyone before the movie came out, everyone wanted a Lotso. It's like, oh, God, I hate him.
How many kids brought the Lotso Huggin' Bear plush to the theater? You know, I wonder if that happened, and then through the film, they're like,
"That's so sad,
monster!
You monster!" I wonder if that really happened.
Oh,
I'm afraid of my dolly, Mom.
You know, this And, you know, of course, they get the circus bugs to be their protectors. And obviously, the film was probably inspired by, like, Kurosawa's Seven Samurai, which inspired Magnificent Seven, which inspired the Three Amigos. And it's a great story, you know, a ragtag, you know, group of misfits who have to repel a horrible menace. In fact, I see a lot of Seven Samurai in this one, but are there seven circus bugs? Okay, they take out P.T. Flea. There's the Mantis. There's Gypsy. Gypsy, come. Stage is the other way, dear. Yes, of course. Francis, you're making the maggots cry.
Slim.
And then there's Tuck and Roll. And
that's Heimlich.
And then... Then there's Rosie, so that's eight. And then P.T. Flea, so that's nine. So it's not quite seven. But you can think of Tuck and Roll as one character.
Yeah.
So there's our seven bug samurai. I love their little made up language.
Yeah. Character drawings of those were actually inspired by a drawing that Andrew Stanton did in the second grade of Two Bugs.
Old Andrew Stanton stuff, man.
Like, that's classy.
Yep.
Oh my gosh. Going back to all of the funny, punny jokes, that was the other part that I really appreciated about this movie, was that all of the bug just jokes that they just threw in, like the La Cucaracha song that everybody always knows, La Cucaracha, La Cucaracha, yeah, da 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 da.
Yeah, nobody knows it.
But it's so catchy that everybody knows that part. There's a part in there when they go into the like bar scene of when they're in the city.
You
can hear in the background them playing Itsy Bitsy Spider on one of those ragtime pianos.
Oh, that's pretty good.
I was like, I appreciate that.
There's like two mosquitoes and one of them orders and he's like, "Hair of the dog I beat." And I thought that was really neat.
The what?
He orders like, "Hair of the dog I beat." You know, instead of "hair of the dog that bit me."
Oh,
there we go. "Hair of the dog I bit." Oh my gosh, that totally flew over my head. I just got the Bloody Mary joke. That's pretty good. "Hey, I said no salt."
Oh, poor dude.
Yeah, that'll kill him.
Yeah,
I found that out.
Yeah, that could kill him.
Before we recorded, I was like, oh, no. I didn't mean to. He's only supposed to be ticked off like in the movie. Anyway, didn't mean for it to go so far. Let's see. Boy, we're kind of jumping around here.
We really are. It's all good.
That's all right. That makes for a good episode.
I thought the character design was really good. For example, like they gave less legs or arms to the ants and more to the grasshoppers. So we like the ants better than them.
Oh, the grasshoppers are more monstrous.
Yeah, they're really scary, especially Hopper, which has like a lot of like height and stuff.
What I really enjoyed about this film was the nuanced animation, especially of Hopper. Like even when he blinks, his head twitches. Like he's very much like a machine or a monster, kind of like Alien. You know, the Ridley Scott film. The alien is very insect-like. And stuff like that. So yeah, they definitely achieved like some very monstrous results. Also, a great thing about this film is how close up everything is. You know, of course, Pixar always doing their research. They made a little bug cam and they, you know, ran it through the campus and in leaves and grass and stuff to get like a bug's eye view of things. But everybody is so close up, and so the level of detail on the bug characters is just phenomenal, and it's very imaginative how they just make things so close up and stuff like that. And I don't know if anyone's ever seen the documentary Microcosmos. Maybe it's still on Netflix, but it's a really good bug documentary, and it takes you way up close to them, and it's pretty cool.
I also really appreciated the sound design, especially when the bugs start flying. Like when the grasshoppers start flying, it sounds like motorcycles. So yeah, it's like they're like a gang. And I noticed a lot of that stuff, and I hadn't noticed it before, so I really appreciated that. But can we take a moment to consider it, the people in the Pixar marketing department? Like they have bugs, rats, like poor people.
Yeah, totally. They really have to work on that appeal. Yeah. I think a lot of it is shape language. If I went back and watched the film again, I would look for the basic geometric shapes that some of the characters are made up as. I would say that Hopper is very square, but he's also got some triangle. I don't know. Thumper's got mega triangle going. Of course, all the bugs are usually circle based, I think. Yeah, so circles, you know, kind of like I can't believe I'm blanking on the kid from Up, Russell. He's very circle based, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Also color, you know, all the circus bugs are very brightly colored, obviously, because they're kind of clowns and stuff, but all the grasshoppers are very, you know, gray and muted and kind of I guess that ramps up the creepiness. Also, there are pink ants and blue ants. That's how it works. This is nothing compared to the twig of 43 or whatever.
I thought it was really good writing because it hasn't been like a minute and we already see that the ants can't deviate from what's planned. Mm-hmm. Like just at least
there's really not a lot of individualism here.
Yeah. It's like, oh my god, I can't do it.
Even with all these great inventions that Flick invents, you know, that could make their life so much easier.
I know.
My yes. Princess, aren't you looking lovely this morning? Of course, you don't need a telescope to see that. Oh.
See, yeah, I'm going back to what Pablo said. The writing in this was really, really good. I mean, the characterization, helping you understand the story without having to tell you the story, you know, without, you know, showing you these details. Oh, the ants don't know how to do anything for themselves. But Blake was so different. Da, da, da. And then looking at all of the, they did such a good job of just showing you, and you got the picture right away.
Yep.
We actually, Morgan and I just reviewed the book Funny, which was all of the shorts, not the shorts, a bunch of gags from the
Just the gags at the artist. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just, looking through that really helped me appreciate all of the, just, you have to be able to get a joke across in one or two frames, like one or two pictures, just have it maybe four at tops. But after that, you're like, if you can't get a joke across in more than four frames, it's not a good joke.
Wow.
And like, that was such a cool thing to see, that all of those, it was just cool because you can just see how that type of a mentality really led to really great writing in movies like this.
The writing is great. Like, I love kind of the multi-layered approach of dealing with a threat. And there's the colony's way, and then there's Flick's way, and how, I don't know, I just feel for Flick. I feel like we all kind of relate to him in some way, you know?
Yeah, definitely, because he's like the one that wants to be different but feels left out. And like, we can all relate to that.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know if anyone in our audience has ever felt like prejudged by society. You know, I love Shrek. They judge me without even getting to know me. And, you know, we struggle to find our place sometimes, and maybe people don't understand us or think that we're screw ups or no good. And this film is all about, I guess, sticking with it, because Flick could have just left the colony alone. You know, he could have just like ran off to the city and not done anything, because he was pretty good on his own. But he, you know, something did make him come back, and there was never really that conflict where he questioned his loyalty to the colony. It was just he thought that his way of doing things was going to save the colony, and that wasn't what everyone understood. And then there's that, there's that really, really sad part, the low "you lied to me" part, where she's like, you know, "you lied to the colony, you lied to me, and like an idiot, I believed you," and all that stuff. And she's like, "I want you to leave, and this time, don't come back." It's so, and then P.T. Flea's like, "Tough crap." But anyway, it's tough, and in the end, only Flick's ingenuity could save the day, and so hopefully the colony learned its lesson.
Yeah, I was surprised by how like black and white it is, because Pixar usually goes for like something a little bit more complicated, like for example, Toy Story 3. Woody kind of agrees with Lotso, like everyone wants to be played with forever, but
that's true.
So, whereas this is just like underdogs versus the bully. So I was surprised by how black and white it is. And I wonder if that plays a part in how forgettable it is. Like, it's really good, but I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. It seems like it has all the essential ingredients of a really successful, memorable Pixar film. But for some reason, like, obviously there are listeners and animation fans who really love this film and set it apart. But I really think it's gotten overshadowed over time. And so, I mean, it's definitely worth watching again.
Yeah. You know, one of my writing instructors always said that when you enjoy a movie, but kind of forget it afterwards, the movie gave you what you wanted, but nothing you needed. Do you think it's the case with this movie?
Whoa. It's the Pixar film that we deserve, but not the one it needs right now.
That's totally unrelated, but I get your point, Pablo. That's really interesting. While I am a firm believer of guilty pleasures, I don't think this movie qualifies as one, because it really is high quality.
Yeah, I struggle to understand why I don't remember when I know all the other Pixar films so well.
It's one of those movies that you just, I don't know. This is one of those. If anybody is out there that you think you know why we keep forgetting about it, please let us know.
Please.
Well, they're like Bugs Life fanatics because you're jerks. But anyway,
I struggle a lot to understand my feelings towards this movie. I mean, doing my research, I found the first quote ever that explains, like, gets close to explaining how I feel. It was from the Entertainment Weekly review, and the quote is, "A Bug's Life may be the single most amazing film I've ever seen that I couldn't fall in love with."
Whoa.
That applies to me, because I have to be honest, I don't love the movie. I think it's really good, and I really enjoy it, but I don't fall in love with it like I do with Monsters, Inc. or Ratatouille or any of the Toy Stories.
Yeah. Mm. All right.
Well, should we?
I think we've talked a lot about this film without even going into the story of the film.
Yep.
Well, just one comment. I love the ending. There's this like climatic, chaotic battle.
So scary.
The rain is terrifying.
So scary.
And it totally
scary.
Makes sense. It's like, oh, yeah, that's what rain is like to ants.
Yeah, I was really scared. And the bird attack is really exciting and also scary.
Hopper's demise is
oh, that's
really
that's so creepy.
This is the first film Pixar did where, well, I mean, it was only their second film, but it was the first time that they had actually killed the main antagonist on screen.
Yeah, they should have killed Sid. should have killed him. Should have killed him and then written in his blood on the wall, "That's why you are nice to your toys. We toys can see everything." Anyway, that's pretty morbid. That's how it should have ended.
Yeah, right.
But anyway.
Who else dies in Pixar movies? Syndrome also goes away memorably.
Syndrome blows the crap up.
Pretty.
Mons falls to his death.
Yeah.
Months. Months.
Yeah, and I guess Mordu dies. I don't know if he's the rave villain. I don't know if he counts as a villain.
The villain is herself, is Meredith.
Yeah, exactly. That's more Pixar. Pixar doesn't really do villain, like they've done it a couple of times, but they usually have like antagonists, and it's usually the protagonist itself.
what if in every Pixar film the villain died? Remy's like, "I know how to get rid of that pesky food critic."
Just rat poison.
He's got, like, chloroform. He's just like he's telling Linguini to put it in the thing. Yeah. Linguini's like, "I don't know about this." Trust me. Or it's like, I don't know, Wall-E. I don't know. It would betray Wall-E to suggest that they like kill off people. But there's no real. I mean, there's kind of an antagonist in Wall-E. It's man. Man is the antagonist.
Yeah, I guess if you have to pick one, it's the ship's autopilot. Auto.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, but it's like, yeah, they usually do antagonists, not villains.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Should do
well, and then this is the first film that they did the bloopers.
I love them. I miss them. Why aren't they doing that anymore?
I feel like the animators either had a blast with those bloopers, or they like totally hated them because like deadlines were looming and stuff. But I felt like this would have been a really great way for animators to just blow off some steam, you know?
Yeah. They did this in this movie, then Toy Story 2, then Monsters, Inc., and that's it, right?
Huh?
I don't remember after that.
Yeah, I think Monsters, Inc. was the last one.
Oh, yeah, with the bloopers. It had kind of bloopers, because they went way down the rabbit hole with that, that musical that they wanted to write. What a night for my mom to be in the audience!
And then Toy Story 3 and Inside Out do the same thing. It's not bloopers. They're just like just jokes, and
extra
they're great.
Stuff. Yeah, what I loved about the bloopers is that it really made you believe that these were real characters, because they mess up just like real actors. Hey, like what if they were all like, you know, what if they were all actors on the payroll? And also Woody shows up at the end with the marker card at the end.
Yeah.
I liked the Cars ending credits where they do all the Pixar films as Cars.
It's like,
these are the same guy in all these pictures. What kind of cut rate show is this?
I didn't remember that.
Yeah. I don't know.
Oh,
but I do miss the bloopers. They were really cool.
Yeah, they were really funny.
The Toy Story 2 ones are brilliant.
I think those are my favorite. They're so
where
funny.
Woody and Buzz keep pranking each other.
I love when all this stuff Mrs. Potato Head is just like stuffing into Mr. Potato Head and just like...
Fight for the monkeys, of course!
Oh, just...
Get my agent on the line. That's pretty good. Let's see. Oh, we can't close this episode without talking about, is it Jerry's Game or Gary's Game? I'm so bad at pronouncing. Yeah, Jerry's Game.
I don't know, but it's one of my favorite Pixar shorts.
It's one of the most creative Pixar shorts, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so good.
It's got a brilliant, it's not even a twist because you know what's happening the whole time, but the, just the entertainment is from how this guy snaps between two characters and stuff and how he wins.
And then the payoff at the end was fantastic.
Yes.
I mean, that was just fantastic. Of course he would be playing for his team.
Yeah, it's so good.
That's an interesting concept, how in 3D animation you can take the camera and do camera tricks, just like in real cinema, but you can take the camera in places that you wouldn't normally be able to. So, you get up right up close to the chessboard and all those dynamic, like, shots of evil Jerry, like, or aggressive Jerry, like, being very aggressive and stuff. It's something like that. It's such a great little concept. Like, how do you win a chess game against yourself? You turn the tables on yourself and then you win. You beat yourself and you win. It's a great little logical fallacy there.
Definitely. And going back for a moment to A Bug's Life, also worth mentioning is the like 4D ride in Disney World. Dude, I was really scared by that as a kid.
That's intense. I went only like a year and a half ago, and it was really intense then. Like, Hopper's pretty sadistic. He certainly does not like humans that could possibly be material for a prequel or a sequel, although I hope they never do one.
Yeah, me neither, I think.
I knew they were going to jack with us. I knew they were going to mess with us. The bug spray. Like, I don't know. That just seems kind of culturally insensitive. Like, what if tourists are coming to Animal Kingdom from, like, war-torn countries, you know? What if there's people who went through the Khmer Rouge or something like that, and all of a sudden there's this supposed nerve gas filling the room? Like, I don't know. What does that do?
I just think it's really scary.
Also, people who are afraid of spiders do not need to even go a thousand miles near that ride.
No.
Oh, Frank Foster just mentioned Presto as his favorite Pixar short. And I actually think that is my all-time favorite, but
yeah,
Jerry's Game is very close behind it.
I think it's Presto's Game, Jerry's Game, Jerry's Game, and For the Birds. I've always loved that one too.
Oh, For the Birds is so cute. Those little jerks.
The Big Bird is just so adorable and funny.
Have we ever done a ranking of the Pixar shorts, Chelsea, on the show?
We all did our own ranking once.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was all, one of the other Pixar movies that we did. We did everybody said, okay, these are my top three. So we haven't done an all over. But here's actually looking forward in the next couple of months. So the week before the Oscars this year, we're going to be doing is we are going to be going through all of the Oscar nominated shorts as a podcast. So I'm really excited about that one. And we're going to be talking about it all week on the website as well. So shorts is kind of something that we're focusing on over the next couple of weeks for sure, months. So up until the Oscars in February. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah. All right. That'll be fun. Okay, I think we're just fiddle-faddling around, so I guess we better rate this and wrap it up, huh? We love hanging out with all of our listeners on the chat and stuff, but,
I have one final thought.
All right, you're permitted one final thought, Pablo.
Thank you, Mason. I've always loved the ending when, like, it zooms out and we see the island where everything happened. It's just this teeny tiny piece of land with a tree, and it's just amazing because it's tiny, but we saw like the whole wide world it contains and everything that can happen in it. I just love the ending. I've always loved it.
It all happened on the top of us what was the one in the Who in Whoville?
Oh, the snowflake.
That's
so existential. Like, what happens when the snow falls? Do they all die?
Yeah.
The futility of life, man. From their perspective. Anyway. Okay, so what do we rate Bug's Life?
So for me, I'm going to give it 4 stars.
Four solid stars.
4 stars, yeah. I would say because of the quotability of it, for sure, gave it. And because of just the all around, the good writing, the good, you know, characterization, they just did a really stand up job on all of those aspects. Now, as far as like a movie that I'm like, I want to watch this all the time. No, so it's not a 5 star for like in that way. But I can't, I mean, I guess, I mean, some people might give it like 3.5, but I'm just going to go with 4 stars.
All right.
I'm holding off.
What do you think, Pablo?
I'm going to go with 3.5 actually, because I really, really like it. And I think it's really good, but I just watched it today. So I know in 1 week I won't remember it because it's happened to me countless times. So I think the fact the movie is memorable is very important. So I'm going to go with 3.5 just because it's not very memorable to me.
Mm-hmm. Wow. All right. Well, I was going to do 4.5. I think I'll just do 4. Like, it's not the perfect animated film. Obviously The Lion King is, and, I don't know.
I'm sorry. Did you say Toy Story 3? I couldn't hear you.
Well, I always say that, I always consider The Lion King to be the greatest 2D animated film of all time, and I'm yet to settle on the best 3D animated film of all time. Toy Story 3 is very high up there in my list.
I hope
but, so. I'll just do 4 stars, I think. I mean, I really like it, and I love it for nostalgia reasons, which I typically frown upon, like, loving a film or a thing just because of nostalgia, but this one, like, was part of like defining my childhood definitely. And it got me interested in things like computer graphics and animation in the first place. And so, it's definitely an important film for me. And I really think just the general formula of A Bug's Life is really good. Like it started to define like the Pixar touch in its films, and, brilliant characters, very quotable, of course, very intense, very good adventure. And so, yeah, 4 stars, there's nothing wrong with that.
Hey guys, DJ Slope, I wanted to call in because you're talking about Bug's Life, and I actually really like this movie. I always miss out on calling in, but I'm here I am now. It's a great movie. It is a great movie. It's not a brilliant movie. It's not fantastic. It's not better than Toy Story, obviously, and I think that's a lot of the reason why people don't think it's fantastic. Because I do really think it's a good film, although when I was younger, I will say that I didn't think it was fantastic. I remember Heimlich, the caterpillar character, was a little bit annoying. I didn't really like him too much. I think Francis is a bit too generic. I still think Francis is a bit too generic, a bit too much of an obvious Pixar sort of character to come up with. I remember my sisters went to see this at the cinema when, Hopper comes leaning into the camera really sinisterly. It was quite quite scary for us. She had to leave the cinema from it. I know you shouldn't compare it to Ants. I think Bug's Life is better than Ants. And at the time, I used to think Ants was better. But watching them both back quite recently, Ants has aged quite badly. And Bug's Life still holds that Pixar legendary feel. You know, I think it's great. Anyway, it's great to call in, guys. You will hear more from me this year. Keep doing what you're doing. It's fantastic work. I love listening to you guys while on my drives and my commutes. Anyway. I've only got 24 hours to live, and I ain't gonna waste it here. Bye-bye!
Hey, Morgan, Mason, and Chelsea. It's Mark from Orlando. How are you guys doing? I'm just calling in to leave a question for you guys. I know a few episodes ago, you guys received a question in the voicemail about basically name an animated movie that generally people like, but you guys don't. So I thought I'd call in and ask the opposite of that. Can you guys each name an animated movie that generally everyone dislikes, but you guys just can't help but like? And for me, an example of this would be, I'm sad to say, I'm kind of embarrassed to say it, but the Strange Magic movie that came out in 2015, last year. I know it's a bad movie. I know there's barely anything good I can say about it. but I don't know. I can't help but like the movie. Why? I don't know. Is it the jukebox musical aspect of it? Maybe. Is it the Beauty and the Beast kind of twist to it? Maybe. Is it because I might have a crush on the main character, Marianne, which is totally not weird at all? Maybe. But I don't know. Like I said, I'll never defend it as a good movie, but I just... It's a guilty pleasure of mine. So yeah, looking forward to hearing what you guys' guilty pleasures are, animation, film-wise.
I love the first Transformers movie, and people have probably heard this before, but I get a very spiritual message out of the first Transformers film. Everybody laughs, but that's just the way it is. What's an animated film that I like that not a lot of people like? I love Shrek. I love Shrek with a passion. Shrek is love. Shrek is life.
For me, a movie that I grew up, I mean, can't go wrong with Rockadoodle. I love me some Rockadoodle.
I don't really believe in the concept of the guilty pleasure, but I know what you mean. Kind of like how I have almost every Japanese-produced Godzilla film ever made on video. And I watch them regularly. Animated film. TMNT, but I don't think that's a bad animated film. I don't think it's a guilty pleasure. I don't know. Probably like Santa Claus is Coming to Town or Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Like, those are so old. But I love them.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Or A Year Without a Santa Claus. That one's definitely something you should watch.
Have you ever heard of The Easter Bunny is Coming to Town? It's terrible.
I would assume.
All right, so anything else? I think all right, so 4, 3.5, and 4, I'd say that's pretty good. I mean, Bug's Life is a good film. We love it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right, thank you guys so much for coming in.
Yeah, absolutely. This is about all the time we have. And again, we want to thank Pablito, El Gran Pablito, for for coming to us live and bestowing his Pixar wisdom on us. Always a pleasure to have you.
Always a pleasure to talk to you and to everyone. So I hope you invite me back soon because I really enjoy this.
Yeah, we'll see about that. Let's see. Yeah, yeah. Okay, we love posting like extra links and stuff and like summarizing the show notes and stuff for the episode. So to access all that, you can go to rotoscopers.com/115. And that's how you get to this episode, so Bug's Life 115. So be sure to comment on that website, comment on the YouTube, comment everywhere. We love your feedback. Give us your reviews. Give us your thoughts and your opinions. And if you want to tweet about this episode, you can use the hashtag AnimAddicts or AnimAddicts 115, so 115. And that way, you know, we can all discuss the episode. You know, we'd love to hear. We got some really good suggestions on how to improve the audio quality, and we're working on those thanks to listener feedback. So we really love you guys for that. If you want to leave a voicemail on this wonderful podcast, you can go to rotoscopers.com/voicemails to leave one. Also, you can call us at 406-646-6575. And like we've been saying, like we wouldn't even be doing this video format without our patron subscribers. So make sure to go to rotoscopers.com/Patreon to learn more about being a Patreon subscriber and learn about the awesome perks and all the like cool secret stuff that you get to access. Mostly it's greater access to us. And we all know that you want to be our best friends and we want to be your best friends. So let's work something out. Let's deal. But really, the perks of being a Rotoscoper Patreon are great. And but most of all, we really wouldn't be able to be doing this in this format without y'all. So thank you so much. Rotoscopers.com/Amazon to support us through our Amazon affiliate link. And then you can also support the show by getting your Audible free trial, which is like the number one resource for audiobooks. You can go rotoscopers.com/ Audible. And we have a store, rotoscopers.com/store. You can get the Roto t-shirt, stuff like that. And please, if this was your first time and you enjoyed what you're listening, then subscribe to us on iTunes. That way you can always get synced up with the latest episodes. We're also on Stitcher Radio. And please leave a review.
Yes, we are running a big promotion right now.
What's that promotion?
Let me tell you.
Okay.
So for anybody who either writes a review, if they've never written a review on iTunes before, if they write us a review, take a screenshot of it and send it to our email, contact@rotoscopers.com, then you will be entered in the contest to win a free, art book.
Holy cow. Like the one that we already have, or can you just pick it out?
Like, we will order you an art book off of Amazon, basically. Any of the ones that have been, anything that's like in print right now, we'll basically pick your pick, whichever one you want.
Do like the Art of the Godfather that's like $40,000?
No, right now. No, we're not going to do that. But,
printed like 10 of them in print, we
will definitely do. And if you've already left a review on it, you can update your review. Because you are able to do that. So go ahead and update your review and take a screenshot, send it to our email, and you will be entered in to win. I mean, come on. Take 5 minutes, whatever. You could win a free art book. That's awesome. And even if you don't win the free art book, you will still be helping us, your friends, be more recognized and, you know, help other people find us on iTunes.
Yeah, I don't know if you, you know, not to brag or anything, but I'm pretty sure on iTunes we're the top rated animation podcast. And that's definitely, you know, it's feedback from our listeners. We love you guys. And, you know, of course, you know, get involved with the community if there's anything we can do to improve or any suggestions you'd want to make. Like, we're very personable with our community. And I always consider you guys friends more than fans, definitely.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
All right, check us out on Hypeable and Animated Views. And we're all over social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr. And, of course, since I am podcast master, you can see my Twitter handle and my Instagram handle, for that matter, down here. I do have a blog, thisanimatedlife.blogspot.com. I'm actually posting works in progress for my current grad school classes. And I am doing a cool facial animation class with Dr. Fred Park, who pretty much invented it. And so check that out. And my portfolio site just got redone. So masonsmithportfolio.com. If you are an industry professional and want to give me a job, then check out masonsmithportfolio.com. I promise you it'll be worth your while, I hope.
I just updated my website too. It's got a whole new redesign. Pretty awesome.
Do you have any more songs?
Yes, I actually do. I have.
Because I'm getting kind of tired of listening to I Got Rich over and over.
Well, now I added some Spanish songs in there for you. So.
Ah, muy bien. No Portuguese?
Not yet. I haven't gotten there yet, but I do use some of the older stuff that I had. But they're all still great things. So check it out. ChelseaRobson.com. You can also find me on Twitter, Chelsea Robson, Instagram, Chelsea Robson. You get the gist.
All right. Do you have Periscope? I want to do Periscope so bad.
I do have Periscope. I haven't done it for a little bit, but I'll do it again.
Yeah, that stuff's great. And then at Pablo RV7, if you want to reach out to Pablo on Twitter. Oh, look. Hey, he's got his own title card. He's got his own little thing.
Well, say something.
I totally improvised it.
Well, keep talking. I am the master. I will put you up first. There you go, right there.
Yeah. So you can follow me on Twitter at PabloRV7. yeah, tweet at me and we can talk about animation and whatever you want. I'm friendly.
Pablo is very friendly. Entertaining and very passionate on Twitter and stuff like that. Always
thank
happy
you
to do that. All right, thank you. Yes, thank you so much. And as always, you know, we love you guys and we love animation. And please like and subscribe and become a lifelong Patreon subscriber, please. Woo-hoo. All right, until next time, let's see if we can get this right. One, two, three. We are the
Rotoscopers.
I never know if that sounds okay.